Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast, the podcast for teachers of physics made by physics teachers. Hi Robin, welcome to episode 5.
Episode 5, I can't believe it, we get to episode 5 already. I'll tell you, I don't think I've ever lasted 5 in anything in my life, so I'm very proud to be here.
Thanks, Robin. My name is Thomas WP. I'm a part-time physics teacher, sadly A-level only now.
And my name is Robin Griffiths, and I'm not a physics teacher at all. I used to be for 9 years, but now I work for the Institute of Physics, and I look after teachers.
In the nicest possible way.
Yes, not in a sort of vaguely mob-like, sinister way. No, I look after them hopefully in a nice way, in terms of looking after them, recognising their wonderful professionalism for all those wonderful people who teach physics, many of whom, let's face it, are not people who would claim to be physics teachers. They're chemistry teachers or biology teachers or PE teachers. Or one I heard this week, somebody said they've been taught physics at A-level by the school caretaker.
We talked a lot about the people teaching physics who aren't physics teachers. We haven't done much to support them, and we are planning an episode to look at teaching electricity and the problems and misconceptions of that, and hopefully get a few tips from some of the interviewees that we've had. So if you have any tips for teaching electricity, do contact us. contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com.
Yes, that would be brilliant. And the rope model and all that sort of stuff, it'll be great. Yeah, we'll have a look at that.
Now, last week when we were talking, I trailed a conversation I'd had with this week's interviewee, Stuart Farmer. He contacted the podcast, listener number 2, he called himself, and he introduced me to the Perimeter Institute in Canada, which I'd not heard of, and they do a lot of work around making practicals that address subjects that are normally, as Stuart says, done by people waving their arms around. Now, in this, we're going to talk about a practical that, but we don't explain it very well, so I'll just explain it to you now. It's a practical to thinking about the expansion of the universe. So you have washers, big washers the size of a 10p piece. You have elastic bands of different lengths, but the same diameter, and you loop them all together. The washers are the galaxies. The elastic band is the space between them, and you pull it, and you measure the distance between the washers. And every child does it, and obviously every child, if they're using the same bands, gets the same graph of expansion, and every child sees that they are in the centre of the universe, but they can't all be. Does that make sense?
So just to recap, because I'm thick, what you're doing, you're taking steel washers and you're stringing them together with identical elastic bands, and you're looping them together so that they form a big, long kind of daisy chain, elastic band, washer, elastic band, washer, elastic band, washer.
Yes, that's exactly right. Then you have different length bands of the same width elastic, which are relatively easy to find as well. And then you're pulling. The washers stay the same size, which is convenient for expansion of the universe. The space grows. The one on the right that's the furthest away from the left gets further away faster. Around it, the kids are measuring the distance between the washers and graphing it. So it's quite an analytical process as well.
Okay, so you can actually get some quantitative results out of this as well. Excellent, okay.
Yes, and as you'll hear in the interview, which I shall play now.
Hello, I'm Stuart Farmer, and I've taught physics for over 30 years. The last 20 or so, I've been head of physics at Robert Gordon's College in Aberdeen.
Thank you very much, and thank you for contacting us, listener number 2. It's getting, you know, as I've said, bottom of the exponential, we're working our way up. Now, I trailed you in the last podcast, didn't I? Because we'd spoken about the Perimeter Institute, and I've been onto their website, but I thought it would be better to talk to the expert about what they do and how you've used them.
Okay, that might be a slightly grand description of me there, but I first really came across the Perimeter Institute when Greg Dick, who's their director of outreach, and some of his colleagues were over at the ASE annual conference in Birmingham in 2014. As soon as I went along to the workshops, my immediate reaction was that the activities that they were talking about and their whole philosophy in terms of the sort of modelling and the explicit building up of ideas about the nature of science and what it is to actually do science and do modern physics was really good and really fitted well with some of the curriculum changes that we had going on in Scotland.
So what can you give me some examples of the sort of things they were doing in those lectures that intrigued you?
Yes, well, one of the first things that I saw was an activity to do with demonstrating and modelling the expanding universe, and the fact that when we observe the expansion of the universe, that we don't observe a centre. Again, one of the big misconceptions that lots of kids, I think lots of people generally, you know, jump to is that if everything's expanding away from us, then we must be at the centre of where the Big Bang happened. So there was a modelling activity using rubber bands and washers to do that. But, you know, it was more than that. It was involved making measurements of the elastic bands and the washers as a sort of one-dimensional universe with galaxies, with space-time in between, and then expanding that and making more measurements. And because if you split the kids up so that they all were sort of alien beings living on a different galaxy, being modeled by a different washer, if they made all the measurements and then plotted a graph of the rate of the expansion in their universe, they always came up with the same answer, that it didn't matter where you were making the observation from, the universe would be expanding away from them at the same rate. So I thought that was a really good activity, which combined with some other, you know, simpler sort of demonstration, you know, sort of teacher-led examples of why there's no definite center that you know, we can identify where, you know, everywhere in the universe is at the center. But it then went on to have another practical activity, which I had seen a more complex version of before, where the recession velocities of galaxies and their the distance to the galaxies could be then plotted. And from that, the sort of graph, just the same as Hubble did, you know, himself 100 or so years ago now, to measure the Hubble constant. And then from the value of the Hubble constant, taking the inverse to get the age of the universe. So, you know, here was a way to teach these concepts and the knowledge that was required by the syllabus in the course about the expansion of the universe and the cosmology, but in a way where there was good activities, thinking activities, practical measurement activities, data analysis, you know, graphing activities for the kids to get on with themselves.
Yeah, the way I would teach the expansion of the universe would be a demo. I have two ways. One, I lie on my back in the middle of the room with an enormous pink balloon that I've drawn galaxies on. And I think most physics teachers would know the problems with that. It works brilliantly that they all see a galaxy, but the galaxies get bigger too, which is not great. My other way is I take them outside with a water bomb. I get them to stand around me in the middle of the tennis court. I chuck it in the air and they all scatter, running away from me, and I make them freeze and then ask them, well, who was running the fastest? They're not running. No. And then we work back from that. The furthest went the fastest. It's very simple. And then we come back and we do the Hubble constant. But both those are demos, aren't they, really? And they're not good preparation for A-level. So I really like universe expansion, one you told me about. It's really nice. Are all there materials around astronomy? Because the ones I saw all were astronomy.
No, there are other ones on particle physics and wave particle duality, quantum physics as well. Like, there's a really good little activity that's part of the quantum reality pack, which looks at the particle behavior of particles going through a double slit with cutting two narrow slits in the bottom of a paper cup. So that, again, it's these sort of hands-on modeling illustrative activities that I think are so great in many of the perimeter materials, because it allows the kids to get an actual experience of what's going on and be able to visualize what's going on in a way that isn't always the case.
Yeah, back in the day when I was, my second year of teaching in central London, a college came out who were doing research, and they had us modeling, had the kids modeling gravity in Excel 2.0, as was. And I took that forward. Years later, I tried to get the A-level kids modeling a superposition in Excel. It wasn't a great success, but I then wrote a spreadsheet that models superposition. You can change the frequency and the wavelength, and it shows you the superposed wave. And I have used that quite a lot when, again, but it's only a demo. I really like this idea of the hands-on nature of it, because, you know, I do a lot of practical work at A-level, but I don't do enough analytical work, I think, by the time they've left. I have too much fun doing the practical. So it does sound like a lot of this, certainly for these areas that I would normally struggle with, it does sound very interesting.
I think that one of the things that I think is good about it, and the sort of general approach, is the whole idea of modelling and explaining what modelling is about. You talked about your demonstrations with the balloons and the dots. You know, I still do something similar, but we can then have a discussion about, you know, what are the pros and cons of the rubber bands and the washers compared to the balloon. It raises this whole issue of how you actually model, you know, the real world around about us, and getting the kids to think about what the strengths and weaknesses of the models are. So I think that it introduces this whole idea about how you go about doing physics.
I do like when one shows that balloon and you say, where's the center of the universe? And they always say the center of the balloon, and then that you have to unpick that.
Wasn't Stuart great? Wasn't Stuart fantastic? I loved listening to him and hearing his enthusiasm. And do you know what? Actually, I have to say, sorry, before we go on, that I really, really loved that he talked about this idea of critiquing models with students. So refreshing.
Yes, I totally agree. And I really felt as he was talking about it that, wow, that's a big hole in what I do. I analyze data from practicals, but analyzing models and I just, again, you see it rolling out before you, all the things that you can do. There's a tremendous amount of stuff at the Perimeter Institute, and it's all free. And it's, if you go to their website, we'll obviously put links in the show notes, but if you go to free educational resources for teachers, there's all these packs you can download, and each one's got tons of activities. I've only scraped the surface, really.
Well, I saw them at the ASE conference in January, and they had a practical there, which I wouldn't be able to describe off the top of my head, but I'm sure it's on their website somewhere, demonstrating how gravitational waves can be visualized in a lab. And this is one thing I thought was really good about them, was that they were desperately trying to find a way to allow teachers to talk about the very latest breakthroughs in theoretical physics in their labs, in schools, almost immediately. And that's kind of a challenge they take on board. What a great, great thing to do. God bless them. We love them.
Yeah, I'd love to know how they come up with the ideas. Are they getting ideas sent in by teachers, or are they sitting around at a table going, how can we do this? This is Thomas from the future. I'm going to cut in here because I emailed Greg Dick, the head of outreach at Perimeter, and he agreed to chat with me and answer those very questions. So let's hear what he had to say.
Hi, I'm Greg Dick, the director of educational outreach here at Perimeter Institute in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada. So yeah, it really is. It's the luxury of time to wrestle with these ideas. So we have a core network of really, really good teachers. And when it comes to making these resources, so in the beginning, so I had made written textbooks, you know, for the ministry, and you crank out 400 pages in 8 months. Now we do 40 pages in 14 months. And it really is that amount of time to wrestle with the idea, to sit with a researcher at lunch and over a coffee and have them beat it up. And then for my favorite story. So we wanted to share the interpretations of the double slit experiment, the quantum results of the double slit experiment. So I was the teacher, and Bruno Hartmann was the researcher. And he went to different camps here at Perimeter and looked at the many worlds and Copenhagen and Pilot Wave. And he talked to people who really espoused that position. And then he wrote sort of three sides of a page. He sent it to me. Now I'm the teacher. I read it. I thought, oh, this is gold. Let me turn it into teacher language. And I bang away on my keyboard and I sent it off to him a few days later. And he looked at it and he started from his original. He threw out all my changes and started from his original. It took us 3 months to get three sides of a page. But that's the beauty of it. That's how you're able to get those really nuanced science ideas accurately, but also in a way that teachers can use them. It takes time and hard work and dedicated creative people, and that it's that luxury that we have.
Thank you so much to Greg for his time, and now back to the podcast. Now, I would like to introduce a segment of the podcast. You weren't super keen, but I think I've talked you over. When we interview all these interesting and experienced fascinating people. Many of them have got a favorite practical they like to talk about. And I was racking my brains for how to introduce it. And I've talked to you about it, so let's go into it. And now, practicals in memoriam. Which practical would you like to be remembered for? Practical in memoriam because I feel that the art of practical is dying out from what I'm seeing, and practical in memoriam because on your tombstone, Stuart, which practical would you want to be remembered for?
The marbles and cups experiment is probably one that I'm reasonably well known for amongst physics teachers across Scotland and elsewhere. The purpose of the practical is actually to explain to kids why it's a good thing, basically, to repeat readings and work out averages when you're actually doing an experiment. So this activity is a very simple one. I did write it up in School Science Review, and it was published in about 2012. It consists of an activity which allows you to plot the graph directly without making any measurements. So you miss out the measurement stage, and you miss out putting the data in a table and working out your average to then plot your graph of your two variables. It actually plots the graph in real time when you do the experiment. Basically, you take an A3 sheet of paper, which is what you're going to draw your graph on, and you draw on two axes, and then you take a polystyrene or paper disposable cup, and you cut a little door, you know, about 20 millimeters square in the lip of the cup. So if you then turn the cup upside down on the bit of paper, a marble can roll in through the door. And if it goes in with some momentum, it will collide with the far side of the cup and push it along the paper. So you set up a ramp with a ruler with a groove down the middle or a bit of curtain rail or something like that. And what you can therefore do is allow the kids to identify an independent variable that they want to alter. It could be the height of release up the ramp or the distance of release up the ramp that they release the marble in the track. It could be the mass of the cup that the marble runs into. And you can increase the mass in regular steps by stacking cups on top of each other. You know, cut a door out of each one. And what you then do is you release your marble, changing, you know, it rolls down the track in the door of the cup, pushes the cup along the paper. You know, so you like start off with the cup lined up on the axis, like the x-axis of the graph, gets pushed along the paper, and then you just mark with a pencil the front edge of the cup, and that's your data point. So you then, whatever setup that you've got, you try and repeat that, and inevitably there's random variation that the kids don't release the marble at exactly the same point. The friction of the cup rolling, you know, being pushed across the paper varies. So it means if they repeat it, say, five times, you don't get five identical points on the paper. You get a little cluster, you know, each point being maybe a few millimeters apart for each run.
So can I just check something? So let's say my variable I want to change is the number of marbles I'm rolling down the ramp at one time. So would I put the cup at one on the x-axis, roll them up one marble down a few times, and then move it to two on the axis and roll two down, etc., etc.?
I wouldn't do it with doing more than one marble, but you can change the marble and do, say, ball bearings of different diameters if you want to change the mass. What happens is you then get your graph consists of a series of these little clusters. So you introduce the whole idea of uncertainty and the fact that, you know, if you vary the, say, the number of cups to increase the mass, as the number of cups increases, the distance that gets pushed across the paper gets less. So you get this nice inverse curve of the points that it's clear when you see the clusters of points that there's a trend. And then you can discuss with the kids, well, you know, where, if you're going to draw a line of best fit, you know, a curve of best fit, where would you draw it? And they say that, you know, you draw it through the middle of all of these clusters. And it's obvious, you know, when you've got this in front of you, where you would draw the line of best fit. So you then say, well, you know, what, rather than having these clusters, what point would you actually use to represent that? And it's basically, well, the point at the middle of the cluster. So how do you get the point at the middle of the cluster? Well, you take an average of all the clusters. So you introduce the whole rationale for why you repeat measurements, you know, the repeatability, doing the measurement without making any measurements at all. It's just, you know, doing the activity. And you can go, the depth that you can go into in terms of the treatment of the uncertainty. I commonly do this with 12-year-old kids, just, you know, when they're starting off in secondary schools. But we also do it with our final year students, the advanced higher kids, you know, who are all going to go on to university to do engineering and physics and medicine and things like that. And of course, the activity is the same. You know, they generally take about the same length of time to do it, but the level of discussion and the treatment, and, you know, you can start talking about error bars and confidence levels, and, you know, if you get different groups to do the same experiments, you can talk about reproducibility as well as repeatability. And there's a whole range of things that you can go into, just what is good practice.
My mind's running away with it. It's absolutely brilliant. Would you be able to share a PDF with us that we could put on the site for people to download it?
Obviously, there's a School Science Review article, but I've also got the pupil instruction sheet version that we give out to the advanced higher pupils that I can certainly share. But it's the sort of thing that actually a teacher demo, you know, this is how to set it up, and a discussion of what are the variables. If you're going to alter this one, how do you keep the other things constant, and all of these sorts of things. So it's not something that I give out, here's the bit of paper, follow the instructions to the kids. You know, I demonstrate it, we have a discussion, they then go away and do it. You know, or we have a little introduction and demonstrate the technique, produce, you know, one or two points of a single cluster, but then get them to go away and do the rest. And they then see this pattern build up in front of them. And then we have the deeper discussion. So I do have a PDF that I can share that does give some instructions. But it's the sort of thing that really needs to be, as a teacher, introduced with a little bit of demonstration, I think, to get the most out of it.
I love that. And I will definitely use that. And I will definitely show it to my colleagues. I'm going to commit to that, because I think it's a beautiful simple. I love the way it draws the graph as you go. Right, thank you very, very much, Stuart. I shall hit stop on this. So what do you think of that, Robin?
That is phenomenal. It's really, really, really good, isn't it? It's just a great way of obviously and excessively introducing the idea of uncertainty of measurement and the fact that measurements will be slightly different each time. So you taught me this fantastic practical, the how long's a piece of string practical, where you do all sorts, and hopefully we'll get to describe that. We'll do that as a tease forward to keep people listening. Some stage in the future, I will pin Thomas down to describe his how long is a piece of string practical, because it is a wonderful way to introduce the idea of uncertainty of measurements and the sources and thereof. So it's good. And I love Stuart's method there as well. It's a really, really nice, easy way of doing things, isn't it?
Yeah, listening back to him, there's two things I liked about it. Number one thing was that when I suggested an independent variable, it clearly wouldn't have worked. And he very politely corrected me. You know, I always choose something stupid. And the other thing is how easy it is to explain. When I asked him about, do you have worksheets for that? He said, well, actually, you just show it to somebody and they know what to do. And I thought, yeah, actually, you just show it to them and it's so obvious. That's a beautiful thing.
Yes, you love those practicals where it is so clear, isn't it? That it's just an evident, yeah, brilliant. Superb.
So if, dear listeners, at least two now, although if we just had them, it'd be a bit boring if we had the same people back. So if there's a third person out there with a favourite practical they wish to share with us, contact us. And how do we contact the podcast, Robin? You can do Twitter at PhysicsTP.
Yes, you can go to our Facebook page, just type in the Physics Teaching Podcast and into your Facebook search and you will find us.
You can contact us through our website, thephysicsteachingpodcast.com.
Or you can go to Telegram or WhatsApp and just hold down the little microphone icon and leave a message for us at the number, which is in our Twitter profile.
Indeed it is. It's interesting where the podcast's going. Mm. I had no idea I'd be talking about the Perimeter Institute 5 weeks in.
Yeah.
And I'm dying to know where we're going next. I do have a couple of things up my sleeve, though, that will come out of the podcast, but I'll keep them under my hat for the moment.
Absolutely. Well, this is it. You'll have to stay with us, dear listeners, all three of you, just to see where Thomas is going with these things. But I have to say, it's lovely to see that the direction is already being shaped by the listeners and by the people who are engaging with the podcast, which is great. And if that's you, if you're listening at the moment thinking, oh yeah, I'd love to get in touch, but I haven't really got time, any snippet you can give us, if you can just give us a quick message, something you'd like to hear about, something you think we should do more of, not even a sentence, just a few words of guidance, and we will read it and we will take note.
If you have a little time, just drop us a few words. If you have more time, email us contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com, or if you're feeling particularly benevolent, rate and review us on iTunes, because I'm told that getting reviews on iTunes is a really good way of gathering other listeners. And we'd really like to reach as many physics teachers as possible, and you can play your part by telling people you know in teaching. Let's help us scrape off the bottom of the exponential.
I'm just writing up the review in iTunes now. That Robin is a genius, and Thomas is okay too. There we go. First review.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Thomas.
See you next week.
Speak to you then.